Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me today. Thanks for hanging around with me. You're going to be glad you did because Jim Ostroff is with us, ladies and gentlemen. Jim's a longtime friend of ours and a great member of our Brain Trust. He's associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and he's sitting in for Joan Pry today, which, as you know, Joan is our regular person from Kiplinger, and Jim is becoming our regular guy too, because he's doing this more and more, and we sure do like that. Jim Ostroff, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you much, Jim, and good morning, everybody.
It's good to have you back. Jim, the news in the lead story in the Kiplinger letter this week, which was printed last Friday,
right,
it still continues to be pretty darn current because it's all about the housing crisis and how it's deepening. And even as we speak, the president is making plans to make an announcement about this. And so this is very, very current information and very important information. And what does Kiplinger have to say about all this?
Who knows? And I say it's a funny thing because we, as you mentioned, we went to press on Friday and we made forecasts, and things are going to happen beginning today.
Mr. Paulson, Secretary of Treasury, Paulson really kind of started the ball rolling earlier in the week, didn't he?
Well, he did basically, sort of, and he's fairly well respected on both sides of the aisle and respected in Washington, saying that something has to be done, and that. No matter what you think of all of the basically foreclosure procedures or what you think of people's decision to take risky loans, they are cascading and if left unchecked could create enormous economic problems in the U.S., cascading problems that go not only from homeowners but to banks and other lenders and down the chain.
Well, and up the chain because of the securitization of these mortgages.
Exactly.
And not just around the country, around the United States, but around the world, because these securitized mortgages have been distributed around the world.
That's right. They've been picked up by investors nearly everywhere. So the big concern is that if nothing was done, we could have basically economic situations spiral out of control for a while, and we can't do that. So
well,
we're looking to step in.
Here's the thing, though, that concerns me, Jim, about all this. Okay, we've got I heard yesterday by a person who is a former president of the FDIC that our chairman, I guess, of the FDIC, I've forgotten what her name is. Her name is, and she said that now those homes are those cases are broken into different continue to march. Some of them will reset, and it'll be tough on those people. And it may cause them to to not spend as much for Christmas, that sort of thing. But then there's another group of people, and I'm not sure what the number is, who absolutely have no chance.
Right.
We already know they have no chance of making the reset mortgage, and so therefore they will go into default, and they will. And by the way, these 1.7 million homes I'm talking about, she was talking about, these are all current. These people are current right now. They're not behind.
Right.
And but those people, that third group will go into default, and they'll lose their homes, and the mortgage companies will take a bath on those, because those homes will be depressed, the pricing will be depressed, and they won't get nearly as much money as they paid out for the mortgage.
Well, that's true.
Here's the thing that concerns me, Jim.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember or not. I don't remember if you did a show with me on this or not, but for 2 or 3 months now, when people have talked about this, I have said I didn't believe that the mortgage companies would cause these people to move out.
Mm-hmm.
That they would be made to leave their homes, mm-hmm. if they had a job and could come anywhere near close to
right, to
doing something, but before they defaulted, before they actually defaulted, which triggers a whole lot of problems.
Right.
I believe that's the way to go. I'm against the government changing contract law and insinuating themselves into these contracts and telling mortgage companies that they can do this, they can't do that. And because, Jim, if we don't have our contracts, I said this in the last hour, we're a nation of laws. And,
right.
and the thing that makes our economy and our marketplace, mm-hmm. the best in the world is we stick to our contracts.
Well, that's a very important underlying concept.
That's beyond, and it's beyond moral hazard,
right,
Jim.
Right.
It's foundational hazard.
Right. And talking of foundation, that's why, you know, in the past we've been very, very leery about going down that slippery slope. You don't know. You don't. What I'm saying is that you may stave off a really very bad problem, you know, in the near term. But beyond that, you undermine a lot of confidence that is the bedrock of our country and our economy.
Yep. Why don't we see the government can do things. There are things the government can do.
Right.
So here's some examples. The government could. The two things I think on a fiscal and a monetary side. Obviously, the Fed's meeting next week, and the British and the Canadian central banks have cut rates this week.
That's right.
Everybody's pretty sure the Fed's going to cut rates. So that's one thing. That's a monetary thing that the government can do to help the economy. Another thing the government can do is they could ease up on some of the regulatory restrictions that banks and mortgage holders have with trying to reset these mortgages so
that
people can afford them. They could do that, and that wouldn't break any contracts. That would be adjusting the law. And then let the companies, let the mortgage holders work out one-on-one, business owner to homeowner, and work this out. Stand by. Quick break. Jim Ostroff and Jim Blasingame will be right back. Mr. Richard Pennyman, ladies and gentlemen, otherwise known as Little Richard, still rocking after all these years. Welcome back. It's 23 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're rocking and rolling with our good friend Jim Ostroff, Associate Producer at Kiplinger's, the Kiplinger Editors, and we're talking about what the Kiplinger Letter has to say these days, and we're talking about the subprime meltdown, the housing situation. You know, Jim, the other problems that are going on out there right now is people who have, in some of these markets, and by the way, I think, and you guys point this out, this is important to point out. They're really, the subprime issue is national, but the truth is there are really about a half a dozen states where it's really the worst.
That's right. I mean, Arizona, California, Florida, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, I mean, Ohio and Texas.
Somebody pointed out that it's one of the reasons why the politicians are getting so excited, because you got California, Florida and Texas and Ohio, which all four have been very much pivotal in recent elections.
Well, they have. And there's no question that they... sort of generate inordinate attention here. If suddenly it looks like everything was going to hell in a handbasket in Rhode Island right now, there'd be a lot of attention there, what with the primary. But, yeah, in many ways, I mean, there are some real concerns, and there are some real economic concerns, but no question politics is playing a role right now.
Well, politics, Jim, I'm deciding more and more that politics is going to become the end of us. It's going to be the end of us. I'm so disgusted with everything having a political solution. Jim, that's not the case. We got to get politicians. See, it'd be different, Jim, if they kind of understood the economy and the marketplace. But Jim, I'm going to make a statement here that's only slightly an overstatement. Only slightly an overstatement. Politicians don't have a clue as to how the economy works or the marketplace works. Now, the reason I'm saying it's a slight overstatement is because there probably are three or four members of our Congress who actually do understand it, but the rest of them do not. And they're making laws based on political reasons. They're going to insinuate themselves into the marketplace for political purposes, and it's going to be ruinous, in my opinion.
Well, and because, you know, many times once you go down that path, there's no turning back. I mean, once you do something like that, you can't say, "Oh no, we made a mistake. We're not, you know, starting next month, we're not going to be doing any of this." You can't
right.
do that. You can't turn it off.
But Jim, and see, this is not like the SNL bailout. This business, if the government comes in and bails out these mortgage holders and the mortgage issuers.
Right.
If the government comes in and does something to bail them out, this is not like the SNL crisis. The SNL crisis, I was involved in that to some degree. Those banks were shut down. Those investors and those shareholders in those SNLs, they lost their investment. Those people lost their jobs who worked at those places, and all the associated industries lost their jobs. I was one of those guys who lost their job because of the SNL meltdown and the Tax Reform Act of '86. And those properties were sold at a fraction of their value.
That's right.
The only workout that was there was the government created an agency that put all that together.
That's right.
But this is different from that, isn't it?
Well, it is. And
what we think the president and the administration and Congress are proposing right now.
Yeah, and we will see, and of course, because, you know, Bush will announce something this afternoon. Yeah, that doesn't make it a law. It's a proposal. There is, at least initially, in advance, some support in Congress. We'll see what comes out. But the basic point, though, is that, yes, it would be of some value and help the homeowners who would lose their mortgages otherwise, but it certainly does secure. It basically gives people who, you know, bet the house on an investment another few chances at the table. Rarely do people get that chance. Certainly, businesses and small businesses don't get a do-over. They don't get a do-over.
We don't get mulligans.
No, don't get mulligans and don't get do-overs. And that's what's happening here.
Well, and you know what? I don't want to sound uncharitable to people who maybe were sold a bill of goods that they were convinced by some mortgage broker that, you know, I can get you the loan on this, I can get you in this house, you know, et cetera. You know, if I could see where a lot of people out there, their dream home, as you said, that the American dream is to own a home. I can see where a lot of people would have an opportunity to do that, and would take it. I would do the same thing, but still, you know, it was bad economics. It was bad policy, bad structure, a bad business deal that was set up to fail, and you know. Also, I wonder how many of those people who have these houses that they can't afford, how much of the reason they can't afford it is because they also have two brand new cars and three flat screen monitor, your television, your plasma television. There's just a lot of stuff out there that there needs to be some pain, I'm afraid. And it bothers me when the government tries to take that pain away. When you make a mistake, folks, you have to pay for it. The government's not supposed to make the medicine taste sweeter. 29 after, right back with Jim Ostroff. I'm Jim Blessingame.
Got a black magic woman. And now, back to the man who humbly and graciously accepted the 2002 Small Business Journalist of the Year Award.
Who's the man? Who's the man?
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining us. Thanks for hanging around with me. Jim Ostroff is our guest. He's associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and we're having a great visit and a great conversation about this subprime meltdown, the mortgage debacle that we got going on in the world right now. That's having some impact on it's having an impact globally, Jim, because as we said, the European, Canadian, and British central banks have been reluctant to cut rates, even though the U.S. cut rates, and now they're cutting rates. It seems like maybe they're feeling a little bit of a sniffles from our problems.
Yeah.
Jim, here's a scenario I want to ask you about. What if 1.7 million Americans took out a second mortgage on their home and gave that mortgage, but the mortgage was given to a casino? The casino loaned 1.7 million families $200,000 against their homes as a second mortgage, and they lost it all and couldn't pay it back. 1.7 million people gambled that money away and couldn't pay it back. The casinos, because they hold a second mortgage on those houses, would have a right to foreclose on those houses. But because the first mortgage had was so high, it would throw the whole thing into default. The homeowners would be kicked out of their homes. The casinos would lose all their money because they don't have any equity in the homes. The first mortgage holders would have to foreclose by contract, really. But because the real estate prices in some of these cities are so have burst, the first mortgage holder would be holding much less value for this property. They'd be losing money too. So it's a big loss all the way around. What's the difference in that casino gambling and what's happened with the housing situation right now? What's the difference?
There is none, and in today's...
It was all a big gamble, wasn't it?
It was, and in today's political environment, the government would rush to bail out the casinos.
Would they? But I don't think they'd do that, though, Jim. That's the point. Yeah, they wouldn't do that because that would be unseemly. You know, to bail out casinos would be unseemly. So what happened was there was a big gamble taken over the last 4 or 5 years. A bunch of people made a lot of money on all that gambling. They got a lot of fees, and the people who made those fees, in my opinion, should be made to pay.
And I wonder, as this, because ultimately there needs to be a law, and as it's considered by Congress, and it'll be fast-tracked, but as it's considered, you wonder whether there will be some element of this law that will hold some others accountable for this. And they say not make homeowners bear the test, but you just wonder here, because basically this, the casino analogy is very good, and people were just betting the house. I mean, of course, there's some individual consumers who were, but more broadly, there were various financial institutions that knew, against their better judgment, that this was going to crash, could not last, but yet ratcheted up their efforts to buy and sell crummy mortgages.
Yep. And I'll tell you something else, Jim. Let me tell you what else we got to look forward to. There are going to be lawsuits. The trial bar right now, the plaintiff's bar right now, they're building products and class action lawsuits, the models right now. They don't have anybody to talk to yet, but they're building these models even as we speak in the boardrooms of these firms. And they're going to be launching these class action lawsuits, and it's going to make the tobacco it could make the tobacco lawsuits look like a small claims court.
You may well be right, and I really feel that it's very prescient. We're going to see a large number of suits here looking to hold, this and that person responsible.
Somebody must pay.
No,
I'm not going to take any responsibility for my actions. Somebody else has to pay for this.
No, and you knew or should have known that I could not pay this back, and look at the pain and suffering you inflicted.
Yep.
And there's where you go. There's a bonanza here, coming billions of bonanza in suits.
One of the things we have to do, though, Jim, we're going to do this when we come back. We have to talk about the overall, in many ways, a lot of the things that are going on in this economy that are in pretty good shape. Inflation is not doing too bad. The people are still working, and that's my point, Jim, for working out of this with the mortgagees and the mortgagors working it out, because people still have jobs.
That's right.
Don't kick somebody out of their house if they got a job. Readjust the payment for them. 20 till. Right back with Jim Ostroff. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with us. We're back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate, and we're visiting with Jim Ostroff. And he's with the Kiplinger Editors. Now, I'd like to tell you about their website, because it's a good one, Kiplinger.com. Just like I said it, Kiplinger.com. And that you can find a lot of free stuff there, but they also have stuff that you can subscribe to, including the four publications that you can get, the four letters, the Kiplinger letter, which is weekly, the flagship that's 84 or so years old. And that's the one that we work off of every week. And the three biweekly letters, the California letter, the tax letter, and the agriculture letter, those are every 2 weeks. And then there's a magazine, a monthly magazine, Jim.
Oh, yeah, Kiplinger Personal Finance, oldest personal finance magazine, and still the best.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you can find that on newsstands, but also subscribe to it, and you can do that at Kiplinger. Go to Kiplinger and look for the way to subscribe. They'll give you a 30-day free trial. And, Jim, you also have a phone number, too, don't you?
Yeah, this is a toll-free number, and that is 800-544-0155.
Jim, you know, the Fed's going to do next week. The Fed's, a lot of people, it's almost a foregone conclusion they're going to cut rates a quarter of a point. Some people are thinking they're going to go a half point.
Half point, right?
The good news for them is, see, they got a problem, because if they cut rates too much, they could spark inflation.
Oh yeah.
They got to balance that very well. Now, the good news is, according to Kiplinger, you know, if inflation is not out of hand right now, and according to you guys, it's actually going to be coming down a little bit next year. Is that going to be is part of the contribution of that going to be housing prices?
Housing. I mean, it's actually in a way just also a function of the economy here slowing a little bit more. We think that takes out. Ultimately, it takes out some of the inflationary pressure, and allows interest rates. You might say interest rates to fall a bit more,
right?
And inflation to ease, of course. But on the flip side, of course, prime rate comes down, interest rates come down, and people who rely on basically COLAs to adjust their government or private pensions will see less of an income too.
Right. So hopefully, with inflation kind of not being too much out of control, and a lot of other indicators in the economy doing okay, maybe the Fed won't feel so troubled, so conflicted about lowering rates next time.
Right.
Which I think they certainly will. Jim, let's move over and talk about in the healthcare field. You guys reporting this week about how a lot of companies, if they're big enough, are actually putting clinics in the building.
Well, they are, and it actually is a real hot trend in healthcare, and that is clinics within companies. And exactly as you said, Jim, businesses, if they can afford it, bring in medical personnel, and they, you know, they help employees participate in, you know, various company-sponsored health programs.
And I'm sure, Jim, part of the justification for this, part of the financial justification, is the ability to keep people at work, the ability to reduce the lost productivity that they have when people get sick and stay home.
Oh, absolutely, and same rationale for companies offering free flu shots at work.
Right, right.
It'll pay for itself if one person doesn't come down with the flu.
Right, exactly.
They did.
So what about companies who are too small to have a clinic in there? You got something on that?
You might just say there are, you know, many, you might say, literally retail clinics in retail facilities like strip malls and others, and as well as, I'm saying, something even like the Mayo Clinic opening, mm-hmm. sort of these satellite facilities.
They're in, they're in malls, they're in places around little, and they're even quicker than some of these dock-in-a-boxes, I think.
That is correct. And
are smaller companies making deals with these clinics for their employees? Is that what's happening?
Well, you know, I mean, some are. They're doing this, and that they say, you know, we will direct our employees to you. We can't guarantee, but if they do, you know, they get some type of a discount. It is an incentive for employees, you know, to go to those facilities, get that health care at a discount. And again, if they are healthier, companies generally are more productive.
Right. So that's something to be looking for. Folks, think about this. Think of when you're thinking about your health care costs, you know, you got to blend into that, Jim. We all got to blend into how much does it cost us when our employees are sick or ill or whatever and they don't show up at work.
That's right. It's real cost.
So that needs to be blended. That's sort of what we used to call the indirect cost. I used to do proposals for companies, you know, we had to show the direct cost savings and the indirect cost savings, and so you got to blend both of those in. Jim, let's move over and talk about investing on page 3.
Right.
You guys talk about some of the wild rides that Wall Street's had lately, and of course we were talking about part of what we were talking about earlier, where the housing market is going to be impacting the stock market, isn't it?
Well, it is. The thing is, you know, for people who think that the wild ride is over on Wall Street, they're wrong. You know, there likely, you know, will be even more volatility, only call it in stock prices, as measured by S&P, for instance, or others. Mm-hmm. And it's because of concerns about credit and growth and other things. So the point here is, you know, we still think that the stock market is going to do very well, but the ups and downs will be more pronounced in coming
months. But I want to remind people that that's Wall Street, ladies and gentlemen, not Main Street. Main Street is the body of the dog. Wall Street is the tail of the dog. Let's not let the tail wag the dog. Wall Street is a derivative of Main Street. Nothing happens on Wall Street unless you and I make something happen first. Let's not let the tail wag the dog. Tin Tail, stay with us.
Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender.
We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and hope you'll check out my website, smallbusinessadvocate.com, and askjim.biz. A lot of stuff there just for you, just for your small business. It's all free. If you can get there, we'll let you in. That's smallbusinessadvocate.com. That's where you can find the show and our articles and all the other stuff there. And also, Ask Jim is our knowledge base, askjim.biz. We've anticipated your questions, and we have answers waiting on you. Jim Ostroff is our guest. He's associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And, Jim, we're wrapping up on the investing section of the Kiplinger letter this week. Any last thoughts that you want to make on that after my little tirade?
It was fine. No, the thing is that, I mean, basically this, a lot of people buy and sell mutual funds. This year, you know, many mutual fund payouts will be very large. And the thing is, you have to realize they're going to be some especially important
some pretty good-sized dividend payouts.
That's right. And there'll be some real tax consequences if you buy the fund late in the year. The thing is that, if you buy it late this year and the fund pays a dividend this year, even after you buy it, it's taxed this year. So you're not really better off.
You could be buying into a fund, and since you're not going to sell that fund, you could have a taxable event.
That's right.
And then what's actually called phantom income, where you have a taxable event but no cash to pay it,
and
that could happen to you by buying into the fund too late.
Well, that's right. And the way to do it here, to avoid that type of problem, you have to look, but you buy after the fund's, you know, record date for the dividend.
Right.
And that allows you, you might say, to buy the fund as you intend to, but avoid paying that, you know, tax on that distribution that you didn't get. Just look at the calendar, look at the payout distribution date.
Avoid the taxable event, and I'm assuming your broker can help you with those dates.
Oh, absolutely.
That's somebody, whoever you deal with, could.
Right.
That's what you want to ask. You want to say, what is the payout date? What is the dividend payout date?
Right, and buy after that.
After that one, yeah, so, yeah.
You know, late in the year, you avoid paying taxes this year on money you didn't get.
Right. Jim, let's move over and talk about an area that you cover quite a bit, and that's energy. Kiplinger's reporting that nuclear is on the verge of a boom in the United States. Tell us about this.
It is, let's say, in short, you know, we expect about 30 new nuclear power plants to be built over the next 20 years in this country. And it will supply, at that point, 20 years hence, nuclear will supply about a quarter of all of our electricity. The reason, ultimately, is that nuclear is a lot more efficient, low cost, mm-hmm. than any other source. And no matter what you say on global warming, like it or not, the thing is there's concern by utilities that there will be constraints on power plant emission of carbon mm-hmm. dioxide. All right, mm-hmm. whatever, no matter what, nuclear plants emit no carbon dioxide. Also, the government has created incentives 2 years ago to build more of these plants. And
Three Mile Island pretty much put the kibosh on nuclear development in this country, didn't it?
It did.
28 years ago?
In 1979, so it's 28 years ago. And about, I don't know, 75 plants on the drawing boards were scrapped after that.
Billions and billions of investment dollars just were mothballed.
They were. And basically this, but since then, in any event, plants that have been approved by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, new standard designs, not only have far more redundancy and safety, but they actually operate more efficiently, producing electricity at lower cost yet. U.S. electricity needs are going to grow 50% over the next 25 years. We got to get the power somewhere.
Mm-hmm. The problem with nuclear, though, the safety issues have really improved quite a bit. You guys reported that this week, but there's still the issue of getting rid of the waste. What do we do with the waste, Jim?
Right. Right now, the high level waste is stored on site at nuclear power plants. Let's just say it is safe.
But if we have more power plants, more nuclear power plants,
we'll
that's going to create more waste.
If no repository is opened in the next 25 years, they're still okay. There's still enough room to store on site. But we believe here, again, a lot of politics going on with Yucca. We believe in the next decade there will be something done to finally move ahead on a high, you know, long-term storage site.
That's, nuclear has got to be part of our overall energy policy for the century ahead. Hey, Jim, thanks for being here. Good job today,
thank
as
you,
always.
Thank
we'll see you.
You
next time. Jim Ostroff, ladies and gentlemen, associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors. He's the best. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.